Today we have Boris Drelyuk with us. He is speaking about his translation of The Silver Bone, written in Russian by Andrei Kurkov. The Silver Bone is longlisted for International Booker Prize 2024. Boris Drelyuk is a poet, translator and critic. He holds a PhD in Slavic languages and literatures from UCLA and has taught at UCLA and the University of St. Andrews, Scotland. He currently teaches in the English department at the University of Tulsa. He is the author of My Hollywood and Other Poems, co-editor with Robert Chandler and Irina Mashinsky of the Penguin Book of Russian Poetry, and translator of Isaac Babel, Andrei Kurkov, Maxim Osipov, Mikhail Yoschenko, and other authors. In 2020, he received the inaugural Kukul Award for Excellence in Nonfiction Book Reviewing from the Washington Monthly. In 2022, he received the inaugural Greg Barrios Book in Translation Prize from the National Books Critics Circle. In 2024, he received the Literature Award from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. You can buy the novel The Silver Bone using the link given in the show notes. Please send us your feedback via Spotify app or through our website. Welcome back to Harshaniyam, Boris.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me congratulate you to begin with on winning the American Academy of Arts and Letters Literature Award.
Thank you very much, Anil. It was a remarkable moment and a great surprise for me.
Can you tell us a bit about the award, please?
Absolutely. Every year, a jury of highly regarded and wonderful authors who are members of the Academy nominate and award 8 recipients with the Literature Award. There are also awards given for music, for architecture. And in each case, it's a small number of recipients who show promise for future accomplishment. So the award is both recognition of things that these authors have already done, but also a kind of encouragement for them to keep going. So I was very much encouraged by this award, and I hope that I do continue to make these judges proud and to deliver on the promise.
Absolutely. Now, we will talk about Silver Bone, the novel which is longlisted for Booker 2024, International Booker 2024. The story of Silver Bone takes place in Kyiv in early 20th century. And what was the socio-political situation in Ukraine at that time? In fact, I read Grabies 2. We spoke about it on our podcast. I was really wondering why Ukraine's history is riddled with conflict, war and aggression and such deep distress to people all the time.
That's a very, very interesting question. And I think a key question for Ukrainian history. I'll start with the second part, which is why Ukraine has been subjected to so much violence and so much conflict over the course of its existence. I think, unfortunately, that's a consequence of its geographic position. It's not only on the border of an aggressive Russian empire, but it was also on the border of another major empire, a couple of major empires, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, as well as the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, which ceased to exist at the end of the 18th century. But I think that Ukraine itself, as a nation, has fought valiantly to retain its shape, to defend its borders. Unfortunately, they've always found themselves to be the smaller opponent. Although it's an enormous country in its current shape, it's the largest in Europe, if we don't count Russia. But they've always been the smaller opponent facing down an enormous empire, either on one side or the other. So that explains much of the turmoil that Ukraine has seen. Now, in terms of the situation in Kyiv in 1919, well, it was a city up for grabs. Ukraine was a contested territory between a number of forces. There were local nationalist forces attempting to build an independent Ukraine after the collapse of the Russian Empire in 1917. But there was also a resurgent imperial force in the form of the Soviet invaders who tried to put down any other government that tried to get a foothold in Ukraine and to reconquer Ukrainian territory for Soviet power. There were also militias and bands of white forces, people still loyal to the old regime that had collapsed, the Russian imperial regime, who were fighting the Bolsheviks. And there were also international interventionists. So in the course of 1 year, Mikhail Bulgakov wrote, power changed hands some 8 times in Kyiv. And as Andrei continues to write these novels, he will have to refresh himself on the history of this period, which is littered with fallen powers. And every month or so, there's a new boss in town.
There is a mention about Cossacks. Are there an independent militia group? Or
The Cossacks, there's not just one group of Cossacks. So there are Cossacks who are loyal to the Soviet power, the Soviet authorities. They're Red Cossacks. Those are the Cossacks that we meet at the very start of the novel who set the events in motion. But there were also Cossacks who were loyal to the Ukrainian national cause. And there were also Cossacks who joined militias and banded together and were loyal neither to one nor to the other side or to any side and pursued their own ends. So the Cossacks are, you know, an ethnic group, really. They're a people who share a tradition, but they, at this time, they all didn't share a political ideology. Some went to the right, some went to the left, some went in other directions.
And now the book Silver Bone is published by Meklos Press.
It's a great publishing house with very rich history, and they have been great advocates of literature and translation. They do specialize in international literature, largely because the founder, Christopher McElhose, who's no longer with the press, was traditionally an advocate from the 60s on of literature and translation at the various institutions where he worked, and founded McElhose with that vision, the vision of bringing international literature into English. He has entrusted Katerina, who was his assistant publisher, with seeing that mission through. They have been great to work with.
Very nice. Now, introduce us to the novel, Silver Bone, and its characters.
My pleasure. They're characters who are very dear to my heart, and having already translated 2 books in the series, the second one is coming out next year, The Stolen Heart. So I've really gotten to know these characters. At the center of these plots is Samson, who is a young engineering student caught up in the turmoil of the revolution and civil war, who loses his father in a grotesque act of violence at the very start of the first novel, and seeks help for his wound, and meets another character who is a kind of old-fashioned, old-world doctor, very charming fellow as well, who a kind of surrogate father for Samson, or at least an aid to him in his hour of need. But he's also, at this time, losing his possessions because they're being confiscated by the new Soviet authorities for military needs and other needs. So one by one, he begins to lose the possessions. And two Red Army men show up to take up residence there. So he has to share his old apartment with these two Red Army men who end up having, he discovers, a plan to get rid of him altogether. He goes to report them to the police, and because his report is so well written, so eloquent, he is immediately hired as an investigator. And so this mild-mannered, rather intellectual young man becomes a detective in the new Soviet police force. He's partnered with a former priest who has abandoned his religion and has become also an investigator named Holodny. And he meets a number of colorful people at the station with whom he will continue to work. But he also is introduced to a young woman who works at the Statistics Bureau named Nadezhda, who becomes the love of his life and a very important figure in his life who offers support in a way that no one else can. So the story becomes both a love story as well as an adventure tale and a work of reimagined history. It's a really wonderful book that mixes a number of genres.
There is a frequent intervention of yard sweepers. These characters come in all the time.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you ask about them. So a yard sweeper in the old days, every apartment building, every home had a yard sweeper. It was a profession. These people kept the yards clean, kept the sidewalk clean, and were given a small living space in these buildings. Yard sweeper for Samson's building has passed away, but his widow is still performing some of those duties. So he calls her the yard sweeper's widow. That's how she's known to the residents of the building. And she's a meddler and also a matchmaker. So she pushes the plot along by introducing him to Nadezhda.
I again refer to Gravies, the earlier novel. He does something very similar in this novel too. It is kind of detective fiction, a detective thriller. He is talking about a common man's life in war-ridden, conflicted area. Even in Gravis too, he does the same thing.
I think that's absolutely right. One of the great strengths, one of the most moving concerns that Andrei has is with the life of common people swept up in extraordinary events. And we saw that in Gravis, of course. We see it in most of his novels, really. There's a common man, sometimes more intelligent, sometimes less intelligent, sometimes better educated, sometimes not as well educated, but always with a not necessarily a heart of gold, but a human heart. And the effects of history on the lives of these people, people who did not set out to make history, but are simply pursuing their lives, is something obviously that haunts Andrei and a subject to which he returns time and time again. In this case, he began to look back to an earlier period in history, but Samson is a character who could very well be walking the streets of Kiev now, and I think he would behave in much the same fashion. He would still try to do good in a situation that has very little good about it.
And the absurd comic episodes in the situation that he creates, I felt it's a beautiful contrast between the darkness in the novel and these comedic situations. It makes the reading all the more intense.
Yes, I agree with that. There's a nice tension between comedy and horror in what Andrei gives us here. That does create a more interesting reading experience, a more rewarding reading experience, I think.
And in both these novels, the women characters, they are not, vulnerable characters. They are powerful and independent characters.
Yes, I think that's the case. I think Nadezhda is not only very charismatic in her own way, but also really admirable, very, very admirable. Although she's on the side of Soviet power as a young woman who, has clear ideals, she really is, I think, out to do good. And she has the strength to do it at a time when women weren't expected to pitch in quite as strongly as she's pitching in.
There is a wonderful translator note in the book. And you said reading Raymond Chandler and translating Babel. You said it helped you immensely in translation. Can you please elaborate on that?
Most of Isaac Babel's stories are set in right around this time, the late 19-teens and early 1920s. He describes the chaos in his own way that swept across Ukraine at that time. Just immersing myself in Babel's work prepared me for Andrei's take on the same period. I had a great detailed sense of what life looked like and felt like for Babel's characters at this time, and I was able to bring that sense to bear on my translation of Andrei's novel. At the same time, I felt it was important to give readers a flavor of the period, give Anglophone readers, readers reading the work in English, a sense that the work is set at this earlier time, that it's set in the late 19-teens, early 1920s. And I happen to be an enormous fan of crime fiction written just around that time, some of it a little bit later in the 1920s, by American authors who gave me the arsenal I needed linguistically to add flavor, add color, add texture to my translation that was honest to that period.
There are certain sentences, suddenly they crop up, they come out of the page and stand in front of me. One such sentence is when Samson, when he's walking on the road in the night, there is a description saying that he walked home empty-handed and was surprised to discover that he felt less afraid without his revolver than he did with it.
Yes, and I think it says so much about him as a character, but also probably says a lot about us all, that even in moments when we need protection and we have the tools to protect ourselves, we feel less safe than we do when we are living in a time of peace. And all he really wants is not to need his revolver. The presence of the revolver reminds him of why he needs it.
This sentence, the way you translated it beautifully, what was it in original like?
It's not a very complicated sentence, but I did like empty-handed as a term in English. It's something that we have perfect for this image. This particular sentence did not present too many difficulties. It's structured in much the same way as it is in the original Russian.
The way he writes about this Red Army soldiers who encroached Samson's home, who encroached into Samson's home, start living. Even about those characters, the writer writes about the miserable life that they are leading, though they are villainous characters.
These characters just want to go home to their villages and work their land. You know, they've been called into service here. Perhaps they volunteered. Perhaps they've just been, they were in the army and their unit became a Red Army unit. And they were in the Imperial Army and their army became, a Red Army unit. But all they really want to do is get home before harvest time. And we can all sympathize with that. We can all sympathize with the great desperation that they felt and the homesickness. And Andrei never allows himself to paint people like that in purely black terms and purely negative terms. There's always a little gray there. And as we learned from Gray Bees, gray can be a beautiful color.
And when I'm reading such passages in the novel, in fact, there is a discussion that why Kurkov doesn't write in Ukrainian. I have a feeling that he does it wantonly, that he writes in Russian so that he can speak to the oppressor directly in his own tongue.
That's a very, very interesting idea. I think there is something to that. But I think for the most part, he writes in Russian simply because it's still the language of his imagination. He learned how to write fiction, how to structure sentences in Russian. He still is able to speak Ukrainian at a native level. It's as much of a native language for him as is Russian, really. And he's able to write nonfiction in Ukrainian without any trouble. And he's also able to write probably fictional prose in Ukrainian without much trouble. But he feels freer in the language with which he has the most experience. And Russian is the language with which he has the most experience creating these richly textured novels. So he continues to write in Russian. But I think it would be a dream if more people who speak Russian, whether they are in Russia or living abroad, for me, it would be a dream if they were to read this, because this novel, as well as his other work, because if anything can awaken their sympathy for Ukrainian people, it's Andrei's work.
Now, what do you think is lost in translation and gained in translation in Silverborn?
Oh, it's a very, very difficult question for me to answer when speaking about any work. It's a difficult question, but it's worth considering. I think that in this case, there isn't much at the human level that is lost in translation. But I did have to sacrifice a few details of Soviet early Soviet reality. Now, I tried to give readers just enough to keep them interested and to give them a sense that there's a very different world into which they've been dropped, and it works by its own rules, and it's full of items that readers would never have seen with their own eyes. But those reading this in Russian or Ukrainian or in any former Soviet region would have a better sense of the things that are described, a firsthand kind of sense of the things that are described, from the Soviet cafeterias all the way to the uniforms, you know, all of these little bits of reality. Well, I had to sacrifice a few of those simply because they said nothing or did nothing for Anglophone audience. But what is gained, I think, is just the existence of the book in another language. I think that translation is always a matter of gain.
Absolutely, absolutely. Otherwise, a reader who is probably thousands of miles away in one far corner of the earth, people like me, we can't even, you know, imagine reading it. Yeah, yeah, great. Now, before we end the conversation, can you please read an excerpt from the novel, Boris?
Absolutely. I think the best thing to do would be to just, because this is a work of suspense, is to read the opening and let people decide whether they want to continue with it. Samson was deafened by the sound of the saber striking his father's head. He caught the glint of the flashing blade out of the corner of his eye and stepped into a puddle. His already dead father's left hand pushed him aside so that the next saber neither quite struck nor quite missed his ginger-haired head, slicing off his right ear. He managed to reach out and catch the falling ear, clutching it in his fist before it hit the gutter. His father, meanwhile, collapsed right onto the road, his head split in two. A horse stamped the body into the ground with a hind leg's shod hoof before its rider dug in his spurs and charged forward at a dozen townsfolk who were running and leaping into the gutters, realizing what awaited them. Five more riders galloped past, but Samson didn't see them. He was lying flat against the slope of the gutter, the palm of his left hand open on the wet earth, and the fist of his right hand tucked under his head. His wound burned and burned loudly and sonorously, as if someone were hammering a steel rail right above it. Hot blood poured down his cheek and seeped under his collar.
Thank you, Boris, for your time.
Pleasure, Anil, always. Well, thank you very, very much. And thank you all out there for listening.